Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. K Wise Whitehead. Want to paint a picture for you and have you respond to it. Now, I have to take you back just a week ago to the scene at the Capitol in Washington, D.C. Now, there were a lot of things happening at the Capitol, the breaking of the windows, the members of Congress on the floor, the passing out of gas masks, the fact that people, like Representative Hakeem Jeffries said at some point, this is a brother now, at some point the brother said, look, it looks like they're coming down here. He said he got up and he took off his jacket. He's like, because it is what it is. Like, if we have to go down, we're going to go down fighting. And then there's this interesting video that came out. What you saw in the video was a huge crowd of Trumplicans, MAGA hat wearing, treasonist, racist, white supremacist, intent on taking over the Capitol. In the middle of this crowd was one black woman who was wearing her uniform. Her name is Ashanti Smith. She's only 28 years old. You may have seen this video. Black woman, she's wearing a mask, she's holding a phone, she's surrounded by white people, a sea of white people. At one point, a blonde white woman tries to grab her phone. And Ashanti Smith turns around and cold cocks her in the face. She punches her in the face. I don't know if she broke her nose. I don't know. Then someone grabs Ashanti either by the hand or by the jacket, drags her out to take her closer to the other officers who seem to be just standing there. Like, I'm trying to figure out how the sister got separated from everybody anyway. When she gets close to the other officers, the crowd begins to hit her, push her. She almost falls down. And at some point, the officers begin spraying out. I don't know if it's mace. I have no idea what they're spraying out. And then a couple of white guys step in to kind of hold back the crowd. Well, Ashanti Smith has been placed on leave because she punched the woman to defend herself. Let's talk about the story behind the incident and the aftermath, which has affected Ashanti Smith, who, by the way, set up a GoFundMe because she has to get a lawyer to defend what she did. Now, justice, if you want to call it justice, has been handed down very swiftly on behalf of the white woman against Ashanti Smith. Hear me when I tell you, Ashanti Smith works there. And she punched a woman in the face, and they said that she assaulted the woman, and she's been laid off her job. She's raised over $100+ for legal fees. But listen, Ashanti said that people are not understanding what she was really exposed to. She said that what you see is you see her on Black Lives Matter Plaza being assaulted, attacked, and harassed by a group of Trump supporters. She says, so the video surfaced where I hit one of the aggressors, but it doesn't show you what happened before. She said, this is what happened before. They tried to take my phone and my keys. They yelled racial epithets at me and tried to remove my mask. I was afraid for my life. I was afraid of being hurt and harmed, and I asked them multiple times to not grab my mask. They were physically trying to snatch her mask off her face. She said she told them to stay out of her social space, her personal space, and they would not. Ashanti Smith, black woman, guard, who works there, she's now facing criminal charges along with being relieved from her employment pending an investigation. She says this is placing her in the midst of a hardship situation. I'm just telling you, this is where we are at this point. She was interviewed by NBC, and she says, you know, it was nothing but a group of protesters coming down. She talked about how scary it was as they were running through Black Lives Matter Plaza, running through the Capitol. She said they were screaming racial slurs and screaming things like F Antifa, F Antifa. And they didn't have any mask on. And people who did have masks who worked there, they were, for her indeed, they were snatching the mask off. Now, the white woman who's been outed by her daughter, her name is Teresa Duke, and Newsweek can confirm that that is her name, Teresa Duke. She was outed. This is the blonde white woman who tried to grab the phone that Ashanti Smith punched. She was outed by her daughter, Helena Duke, who said, look, y'all, this is my mother. And she put on Twitter, Mom, you told me not to go to Black Lives Matter rallies. You told me, you know, I was going to be participating in terrorist events. Is this you, Mom? And then she proceeded to out not just her mom, but her aunt and her uncle, who were in the crowd as well, pushing this black woman, grabbing her, eventually knocking her to the ground. Now, when we talk about white supremacy in this country, when we talk about what it means to have justice or the notion of justice move very quickly for black people, this here is what we're talking about. One black woman who works there, being surrounded by pro-Trump supporters, yelling racial slurs, pushing her, bumping into her, doing everything to get her and trying to snatch her mask off. When she moved to defend herself, as a result of her moving to defend herself and punching the woman in the face, she is now facing criminal charges. I want to ask you, on the other side, what do you think should happen to the folks who participated in this surge, in the siege, in this hostile takeover? What do you think should happen? Because it's interesting. People are losing their jobs now. People are being called out by family members. Husbands are leaving wives. Wives are leaving husbands. I mean, it's just it is something else what is happening. There are people now getting on Twitter and Facebook crying and said, I made the worst decision of my life to go down and participate. Some CEO of some electronics company in California, the board fired him. He's like, the worst personal decision of my life. Somebody put on Twitter, hey, look, for the folks who are losing their job today and for the folks who are getting kicked out of school today, now they understand why their grandparents wore hoods. Do you want to understand why did the Klan wear a hood? Anonymity. You know, 25-year-old Berlina Nebo was walking through her neighborhood on Wednesday with friends like she does every day when she came upon, you know, this the mass of Trump flag-bearing people rallying and shouting, stop the steal. So there's some white people saying, look, I wasn't even doing anything. I just got caught up. Or I went to the Capitol so I could be a witness to what was going on. These are the people you saw last week. A number of them are professionals, president, CEOs, lawyers, doctors, spouses of lawyers and doctors, politicians. You got to think about this deep divide in this country, folks, that we want to think it's just about the economy. Lawyers, doctors, CEOs, politicians, it comes down the race. It comes because it can't be about the economy. Lawyers, doctors, CEOs, and politicians are doing quite well. They are. And not to mention the few protesters who were black who I have no idea why they were there. Let's unpack that a little bit. You know, what should happen? Let's decode some of these right, these far right symbols and whether or not people should have the highest level of response at this moment. We have Al on the phone from Baltimore. Al, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. K. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Dr. K, I listen at you every day.
Thank you.
And I too want you to run for office, but I know you're not going to run for office, Dr. K. But my listening to what is going on today, I do not understand why any of us as black Americans look to find anything different than what we're experiencing.
Yeah.
But I think the sad part about it is when, before things are over, we're already ready to forgive, forget, let's move on. What should we have? What happened to that young lady? That's America. Face up. That's America. And you said, what should be done? Mm. All of them should be processed to the fullest of the law. Every one of them. Every one. You can make all kind of excuses. But no. Every one of them.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you. I mean, let's kind of really figure this out, because this is where we are. Every one of them, according to Al, and Al, I am inclined to agree with you, should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly what should happen.
Dr. K?
Yes, sir.
We work in industries. We work beside these people every day.
Come on.
Don't give them a leeway because they are doctors, or lawyers, or Indian chiefs. We work beside these people.
Yeah.
And what they have in them comes out when somebody like Donald Trump blows the horn and say, let's charge.
Yep. Thank you so much, folks.
All right.
Look at this. Look at this. Now, I want to give you something before Gwen from Maryland. Back in January of 2007, and I'm looking at this article here that's entitled, This Isn't the Final Chapter. Analysts warn, again, about the rise of right-wing extremists. Now, Daryl Johnson, who's the former Department of Homeland Security, he's an official who worked with the Department of Homeland Security, said, back in January of 2007, let's go back for a second, January of 2007, the Capitol Police tipped us off that Barack Obama, a senator from Illinois, was going to announce his candidacy for president. We all knew then that that was going to be a worse case scenario for white supremacists. They said it would be a low point in America when you had, quote, a black, unquote, occupy the White House. That was in their literature, according to Mr. Johnson here. He said, when Barack Obama won the Democratic nomination, the Department of Homeland Security started seeing white supremacist groups lashing out and threatening him as soon as he announced his candidacy and then won the nomination. You couple that with the housing bubble bursting in 2008, which left a lot of people, primarily white people, underwater financially, they begin looking for scapegoats for their problems. Hear me out. 2007, Barack Obama announced that he was going to run. When he got the nomination for far-right white supremacists, it was a worst-case scenario that a black was going to occupy the White House. 2008, the housing bubble burst. It left a number of white folks underwater financially. Barack Obama goes into office. Barack Obama, as a symbol. Now, whether or not Barack Obama's policies were in the best interest of black folks or not, we can have that conversation another day. I'm just saying, it's the image of Barack Obama, the image of Michelle Obama, the image of Malia and Sasha that burned up far-right white supremacists that they could not believe that there was a black man and his family living in the White House. And let's not forget, y'all, I mean, because I don't forget that Barack Obama and Michelle painted the White House black. And let me tell you, they were having black parties all the time. They were. I mean, Aretha Franklin was up in there singing. They were doing everything. Hamilton was up in there singing. Everybody was up. Mary J. Blige performed. Like, they really, as Michelle said, this is the people's house. And the people like R&B, y'all. Let me just say, the people like blues music. The people like soul food. I mean, I was one of the people going every year to Barack Obama's Black History Month. The huge events. We would have workshops all day long. There would be parties. Like, my dad with me to the White House, hanging out, good food, good music, bands. We painted the White House black. And then the response to that was Donald Trump, who said, look, I got this for you. We can do what we can together to ensure that this country is never in the hands of a black person again. We need to take the country back. We need to understand what that language really means. Take it back from whom? Take it back to give it to which group of people in this country? 410-319-8888. Gwen's on the phone from Maryland. Gwen, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
You were talking about the people who are losing their jobs and get fired. Mm-hmm. Well, I saw that there was an active duty. I'm a veteran.
Yes.
An active duty captain from Fort Bragg was out there. She led a group of 100 people up there. You know what her job is? Was in the military? Psychological warfare.
Ooh.
She's on active duty. So she had to resign her commission.
Good.
Then you had retired Air Force colonels,
wow,
privates. And then I heard that the Pentagon had to go in and remind those active duty what you swore to when you raise your hand to defend the Constitution and the country against all foreign and domestic terrorists.
Wow.
So what should they lose? They should be losing their benefits, too.
They should be.
If everybody else is losing something, those that was, if they were active duty or if they retired, they should lose something, too.
Well, let me ask you this, Gwen. First of all, thank you so much for your service. You said you were in the military.
Yes, I was. I did 20 years.
Yeah, thank you so much for your service. What do you think, Gwen? Why do you think someone who's in the military, who takes that oath to defend this country against threats seen and unseen, outside and inside the country, what would make them put that to the side and support Donald Trump in this siege? Help us to understand that.
Like you said, it's all about race, because I'm a black woman, and I've seen it in the military, all about race. They got Proud Boys and Ku Klux Klan and skinheads undercover in the military. They do. It's all about race and who can be dominant over who. That's all what it's about.
Gwen, thank you so much. I appreciate you chiming in. We have Trooper on the phone from Baltimore. Trooper, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K, how you doing? How you doing? It's always good to hear from you.
Thank you for calling. I'm glad you did.
Dr. Kim, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of upset because I feel like this. They need to get Mitch McConnell. Mm-hmm. They need to get Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
See, they need to get the people inside the House. What am I talking about? When Barack Obama was president, you had a lot of Republicans being sheep in wolf clothing, or wolves in sheep clothing. What they did, they said, I'm going to turn Democrat. But they wasn't really Democrat. They were Republican. But they did that way when Obama wanted to pass a bill or suggest a bill, then the Democrats, he should have got it because they had the House. Mm. They had everything. But then you had the Democrats. A lot of Democrats didn't pass or didn't vote. They wasn't Democrats. They were Republicans. And see, Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz, they were behind a lot of this foolishness. Now they trying to play the role like they're on the American side, but they really not. And I just say somebody need to call them out and get those clowns. They need to really
all of them
and not let them escape with anything. But they doing exactly that, and everybody's taking their eyes off the real villains. And the real villains is a lot of them congressmen that's sitting up in there playing like, I ain't with Donald Trump no more. I have enough of them. You ain't said that 4 years ago. that's why I'm mad, Dr. Kay.
No, I'm with you. I think I think in taking them down, take them all down. All the enablers. You know, I'm going to go a little bit far. Take down the daughter, the son, all of them. You know what? Take down the wife. They should all go down. I'm take Barron down, too. Take them all down. All of them. Okay. Thank you so much. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Gene from Pikesville. Gene, you've been holding. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Dr. K. Just wanted to say, I want to mention Mark Meadows in the Freedom Caucus in reference to the Republican Party, because they use, Mark Meadows says if you know who's in the Freedom Caucus, they would have to kill you. But from Sarah Palin and they use an 80% consensus, and that's what makes the Republican Party organized. I'll just leave it at that. Kristallnacht, we're going through Kristallnacht now, and what was it called? The Reichstag fire. I don't know if people are familiar with those two terms, but this is what we're going through right now. But the backlash that I'm concerned about is the same thing that will happen to the right-wing extremists will also happen to the left-wing freedom fighters. I'll leave it at that.
It's interesting because you mentioned, you know, the House Freedom Caucus, Mark Meadows, who, by the way, Mark Meadows, as people don't know, he's actually a founding member of the Conservative Freedom Caucus, a staunch ally of President Donald Trump, actually retired from Congress to start working more directly for Trump back in December of 2019. He is definitely rallying on his behalf.
And he was the White House spokesman also. Really.
Yeah, so I mean, I just want to let people know that when you talk about who is involved in this, Mark Meadows was part of the Tea Party's Contract from America. Yeah. I mean, he pushed other Republicans towards supporting a government shutdown over funding the Affordable Care Act. I mean, he is a far-right extremist who had a position, who was elected, and had the power to enact many of the things that we're talking about now. Thank you so much. We have Margie on the phone from Baltimore. Margie, how are you?
Thank you. How are you, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. I just want to go to the Word. And the Word that Jesus spoke was always in red in the Bible.
Yes.
What I want to say is Matthew 16:26 says, what profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul?
Mm.
In reference to Pence, people saying that Pence doesn't want to, you know, jeopardize his political this, that, and the other. That's not right.
Mm.
And that's all I have to say.
I appreciate you. Hey, folks, let me just say, all will be made right in the end. When does the end get here? Do we have time for one more caller? Okay, when we come back, I have Don, Pam, Anthony, and Dee. Quick break. We'll be right back. To these phone calls, folks. People have been holding. We have Don on the phone from Annapolis. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Dr. K. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
When I seen, first, I knew something was happening that day at the Capitol, but I wasn't quite sure what was going on because I started seeing a lot of police vehicles flying down 97, going towards Route 50, heading all in the same direction. I knew it was something that was happening. When I looked at the TV, I was in shock and awe. I'm going to tell you why I was in shock and awe. I'm a veteran. I'm an Air Force veteran and a former security police officer. I protected nuclear weapons and aircraft. It is nowhere possible that without it being an inside job, as far as the lapse of security, that they was able to take over the Capitol. Somebody also had to put out a I don't want to call it hit. They had to restrain them from using deadly force, even though all of those officers was receiving threats to their lives, and they didn't fire. Only time they fired is when that lady had actually penetrated the inner forces, the inner side of where the
right.
people was located. So we need to find out who, I know a couple of people resigned, but this thing is so deep. We need to find out who premeditated
right.
and let those folks have access to the Capitol, who was involved, because it had to have been more than just politicians. It was deeper than that. It was the DOJ. I think it was people that was involved with the Pentagon. This thing is going to get a lot deeper, but it's going to take the new administration to dig a lot deeper before we find out the truth and everything that's going on.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And then I was thinking about what happened with the security guard who chose to commit suicide. My heart goes out to his family. I just think there's so many pieces in this that may take years before we understand exactly what happened.
I feel the same way.
All right, thank you so much. We have D on the phone from Maryland. D, how are you?
Hey, I'm wonderful. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I think those individuals should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. I also would say it's sad that the officers, they're trained to kill people like us with their force, but when they've met, you know, their counterparts, it was no force really administered. I think it's time to really nurture our seeds, and our haves need to reach back to our have-nots and teach and show them how to be financially educated, because we need to start creating businesses and entities so we can truly compete with the people that are then holding us down for all this time.
Right. Oh, no, I thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Dee. Folks, when we start talking about, you know, where we're going as a nation, let me just give you a picture that just came out. It's a picture of the U.S. Capitol. National Guards people are in the U.S. Capitol sitting on the floor, sleeping. They said they're exhausted because they're there 24-7 now protecting the Capitol, protecting the senators and the representatives. Who would have ever thought in this country we would have to have the National Guard sleeping at the Capitol in the countdown to the what should be a peaceful transition of power? This is America, 2021. We thought 2020 was rough. I mean, it's like 2021 came up and said, look, y'all, I got this. Step back. Let me show you what I can do. I think we're in for a year of challenges around race because, as Leonard Pitt said yesterday, we kicked the can down the road of race, and now we are out of road. Pam's on the phone from Baltimore. Pam, how are you?
Dr. K.
Yes, hi.
Dr. K, this has been coming for a while, and I'm glad that you read that article early from Obama.
Yeah.
But remember when he was elected? They talked about, you know, white people feeling intimidated and feeling threatened and even jealous, and that they could no longer rest on the laurels of their fathers because here was someone that surpassed them. And I remember watching a show, and they were Caucasian people being interviewed, and the father was a pastor, and the son, I forgot what he did, but the father said, "You're just upset because you can't rest on your laurels. You have to go out here and work. And now that you see that it's achievable for everyone, so you feel some type of way." But it's been coming for a while, because I remember a coworker of mine had a picture of Obama in the office. And when our supervisor came through, district manager came through, he was like, "Take that down." I said, "What's he doing?" And so it's been brewing for a while. And I think their jealousy is just getting... it's just getting louder and louder. I remember one time I was listening to classical music, and this man said, "Do you like classical music?" And I was like, "Yes." And whenever they say something intimidating or threatening to me, I say, "Well, you must remember, we invented 80% of everything in the world."
Mm.
You know, and I kindly remind them, you know, about the GDP and how much money America lost $16 trillion for not investing. you know. So I just, when you go head to head with them,
right.
they don't like it.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
But also, I was wondering, Dr. K, I start to reflect with all the war that's taken place. And you know how sometimes they say a soldier was killed in friendly warfare?
Yes, yes.
I'm starting to wonder if it really was that friendly or they did not agree with their political stance.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, what does that mean? Like, what was friendly? What does friendly warfare actually mean?
I know. And yeah. I said that's interesting, but the people aren't here to tell it. But how do you have so many people die or people die and it happens often? So I'm wondering if there's truly disgruntlement inside
right.
in the military.
I think that's a good point. Well, I mean, I'll put that on. I think that's a good point. Thank you so much, Pam. I don't know. I think it's interesting that they had what's come out. Former Navy SEALs were there. There was a two-time Olympic gold medal swimmer. His name is Cleet Keller. He was charged in the federal D.C. court over his alleged participation at the Capitol. Here's the thing. His teammates turned him in. Now, I don't know about you. I'm just going to say it. But I have been looking at the videos and the pictures quite closely. Like, I'm looking to see if there is anybody. I know I am. And I could be the only one who's doing that. But I'm checking. I'm like, I'm trying to see if there are any coworkers up there, neighbors, the person who works at the, you know, the Java shop that I love to go to. How about, the, you know, the guy that works at the over at the Home Depot? I'm checking for everybody. Just to see. I'm just checking. Teachers, I'm checking. Because the only way that we're going to be able to get this thing right is you need to look at those pictures, find your cousin, and turn them in. Look at the pictures. Mom, is that you? Turn her in. If you look at the pictures, go, wait a minute, that's my, you know, my science teacher. That's my gym teacher. Turn them in. Like, that's the only way we're going to be able to do this. Turn them in. Now, a lot of these folks are now closing down their social media, taking off the pictures. No problem. The FBI said that you left a very hardy social media trail. They will find you. And when they do, you should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. I really believe that. I'm really, honestly, and I'm not saying that just because it was majority white people. I'm saying it was our democracy, our perceived idea of democracy, our fake belief of democracy that was on the table last week. I don't get shocked often. I was shocked at some of the things I saw. I was sitting in front of the TV again. I don't get shocked often. White supremacy doesn't. Remember, we have, if you're part of my generation, you know, we've talked about lynching openly. We've seen the lynching postcards that they've sent. I'm a historian. You can go over to right here in Baltimore, Blacks and Wax Museum. In the basement of Blacks and Wax, there's an exhibit down there around lynching. We've seen it. We've seen it in our movies. I mean, I saw Rosewood. I mean, I've seen them. I mean, I've seen Mississippi's Burning. Come on, y'all. So lynching does not surprise me. I have talked to President Freeman Hrabowski about the four little girls. One of them was his friend. It was blown up the 16th Street Baptist Church. That kind of horror and terror, Emmett Till, Tamir Rice, I've seen the videos. It does not, no, that no longer shocks. In fact, I have a problem now watching black people die on film. It's some kind of weird kind of, you know, snuff film that just makes me uncomfortable. I was shocked at what I saw last week. I actually was. I mean, I sat there with my eyes wide open saying, what is happening in this country at this moment? And the more information is coming out, the more disturbing it is. Like, I'm getting a little bit concerned here about the stories that we're hearing that are coming out. And I think now that AOC has come out and she said that she felt, listen to this, she felt that there was a threat outside the door and a threat inside the room. She said she felt that maybe some of her colleagues would be willing to move out the way to make sure they got to her. She said that she had some very specific things said to her. Now, remember, it couldn't have been said by the protesters because she wasn't out there with them. So it could have only been said by somebody in the room with her. She said specific things said to her that made her realize in that moment that she, not because she was a representative, but that she personally was in danger. 410-319-8888. Eric's on the phone from Park Heights. Eric, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K.
Hi.
Yeah, how I look at this, I look at Donald Trump, he's the trigger man. His mic is the gun, and the people are the bullets. Mm. So that's how I look at it, and, you know, that's all I got to say.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so all much. Right. We appreciate you. We have Anthony on the phone from Columbia. Anthony, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good, good. That is a very good point you made about AOC, because if we all remember a few months ago, she was walking down the steps.
Mm.
Remember that?
Yes.
Change?
Yes.
So she does have a target on her back.
Yeah.
The other thing that concerns me is that, you know, they have 70-something million strong, and it's nice to have the National Guard, whatever number it is, but when these folks come back, who's to say that someone, anyone, at some of these buildings, these folks will have snipers at the buildings?
Ooh.
Now, I'm just being, keeping it 100.
Right.
They'll have snipers at the building. You know, all you got to do is drop down $10,000, $20,000, and we're in. We're in. So
That's rough.
I know we have all these National Guardsmen sleeping on the floor at the Capitol, but this thing is going to be so secretive. And this wasn't a secret. We just didn't pay no mind to it. Just like 9/11 wasn't a secret.
Yeah, it wasn't.
We just ignored the signs. But here's, ooh, I'm going to move on. Here's something else interesting that I thought about. We had the Secretary of Transportation resign, Ms. Chow. Now, of course, everybody knows she's the wife of Mitch McConnell.
Right.
Now, do you think she is trying to encourage? I could be wrong. She's trying to encourage. You know this man has done wrong. Chuck, you and Chuck Schumer have already talked about the impeachment. Now he's singing a different tune. So I'd love to be a fly on the wall or a fly in the phone just to hear the exchange that's going on between the two of them.
Wow. That's what I'm saying. We're trying to see what's going on. You're absolutely right. Thank you so much, Anthony. We have Sharona on the phone from Maryland. Sharona, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K.
Hey.
Me and many names. Anyway, look, the House finally peaked Trump. So where are we going from here? It just came out of there and peaked him.
Mm.
So what's the next step? I'm interested in knowing. That's all.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out, too, where do we go from here? What comes after this? We understand that we're in a rough situation right now, so what comes after this? We have Henry on the phone from Pennsylvania. Henry, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I just got a little comment. I was a city firefighter, Baltimore City firefighter. Now, I forgot how long Freddie Gray's situation was. What, about 4 years ago, wasn't it?
Right.
4 or 5 years ago now?
Yep.
Okay. Well, 2 days before that, they had my fire company and several medic units go to the Pimlico High School. You know where that is, right?
Right.
Familiar? At the time, that was a training facility for the Baltimore Police and for the EMS side of the fire department. And what the situation was that they had us there, and they said if something goes down, they was going to lock the people up, and it's going to be processing in the gym, of course. But I guess for whatever reason, when things happened, they didn't do it. 2 days later, when it really came down, we was on a fire that morning. It was around 9 o'clock in the morning, and at that time, I was not into Facebook or nothing like that. I didn't even deal with Facebook.
Right.
And I had several guys on the fire ground say, look, man, it's about to go off. That's what you mean. Say, 3 o'clock, I'm getting all kind of posts on Facebook 3 o'clock is going down in Mondawmin Mall. And like I said, I had no familiarization with Facebook at the time. And I said, I hope you're wrong, you know. I had several guys that was on the, at this side, we'll be packing up to leave. That was in the morning. Said it's going down at 3 o'clock at Mondawmin Mall. Of course, you know what happened.
Right. Oh, no, I know what happened.
Okay, so what I'm saying, my statement is that that was years ago. Now, if you got at least 6 different federal government police agencies in D.C., I'm not talking about the D.C. police. I'm talking about at least 6 different police department or federal and law enforcement in the Capitol. I mean, it supervises federal buildings and parks and all that. And you trying to tell me that when all that stuff went down, nobody had a clue that that was going to happen?
I'm with you. It's not a surprise like they say it's a surprise.
It's right, exactly. So if years ago, if I could see something on Facebook that people told me about, which I said I didn't have a clue about, and it happened, and then you're trying to tell me with all the sophistication now, a few years later, or 4 or 5 years later, and they didn't have a clue as to what was happening? That's all I'm saying.
Thank you so much. We have Frank on the phone from Parkville. Frank, how are you? Frank, are you with us? So, folks, as we're putting this out here, it's this idea of trying to understand how we can connect the dots all the way back. All I'm saying is that it seems to be real simple. It seems like it's one isolated thing. But if you start connecting the dots, you can connect it all the way back. Here's another piece from that story I was talking about. Remember I mentioned just a little bit earlier, Daryl Johnson, a former analyst at a branch of the Department of Homeland Security. He studies threats posed by anti-government militia groups. Here's what he found. According to former Trump era DHS official Elizabeth Newman, she said in the last 10 years, 76% of terrorist attacks have come from the right wing in our country. I just want to kind of repeat this. In the last 10 years, 76% of the threats against our country have come from people living in our country. Right-wing extremist. Getting Barack Obama in office, the push and the work that many of us did to make that happen, struck a particular chord with the right-wing extremists. They're saying here that they are not surprised that it happened at the U.S. Capitol, but they're triggers for extremism. And Donald Trump's presidency stroked all the triggers, stoking a fee of immigrants, warning that your guns are going to be taken away, talking about a new world order in which U.S. sovereignty is trampled, talking about they are coming for your jobs, talking about the rise of the black and brown population. They call these triggers for stoking the fear and the anger of the far white extremists that then culminate in what you saw at the Capitol. That was a long game that Donald Trump played. That's why he was so enthusiastic when he saw it on television. He really enjoyed watching it from his protected seat as they went on down and tore things up at the Capitol. We have Frank on the phone. His phone's better. Frank from Parkville, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling back.
You know what I said? You know what I wanted to say? I just wanted to say this. Okay, you know how you have small crime and small things that happen in a poverty-stricken neighborhood, like, you know, just around the hood, little things that happen.
Yes.
And, you know, they're not of high profile. If you ask me, I mean, this is just my opinion, I really feel like whatever they're planning, I think we should be ready and aware. Because these people, just like the other gentleman said, these people are not, they're not just nobodies. They might not be as intelligent as we thought they were, but
they're not nobodies.
They're not nobodies, and they hold positions, and they have capital.
Yeah.
And when you have those three things, you can pretty much get anything you want, and you can get anybody to do anything you want.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Frank. Here's the thing, folks. According to DHS former official Johnson, he said, look, these far-right extremists, they've spent the last 10 years. This is the part that's going to scare you. Let me just say this. They spent the last 10 years stockpiling weapons and ammunition. Now, this is how I can see a direct connection. Because on this show, we've had multiple conversations on this show right here where I've sat here and said, y'all, are you paying attention to what's happening with guns in this country? I said, we have more guns in this country than people. We have enough guns to give every single man, woman, child, person, infant, newborn a gun and still have truckloads of weapons over. I mean, this is just legally registered weapons. We don't even know how many illegal guns we have on the street. So if we have that many weapons, now here's the thing that's going to get you. And I've said this, so if you're a long-term listener, you've heard this before, just bear with me so I say it again. 50% of the guns in this country, 50% of the guns are owned by 17% of the population. 50%. So if you're saying that 327 million people, and they're saying it's roughly about 345 to 350 million legally registered guns, 50% of the guns out of that number, say 350 million, are owned by 17% of the population. That's it. 17%. They said about 80% of the people in this country don't own a gun. 80%. So that might be you. That might be like, you know what? I don't own a gun, Dr. K. I'm all into, like, you know, peace and love. Okay. You're in that 80% where you don't have a weapon. All right. 17% of the people in this country own 50% of the guns. Now, here's the part that's going to get you, stop you in your track, make you just think. The other 50% owned by 3% of the people in this country. Now, here's the thing. When we start talking about the threats, we've been talking about it. Maxine Waters talked about the threats. Like, we need to kind of just, you know, understand what's happening here. The 17% of the people in this population own 175 million guns, 17%. These are numbers from the NRA. Now, understand these numbers from the NRA are before COVID, because we know the highest population they said buying guns during COVID was black folks. Most people, when they buy guns, buy one gun, buy a shotgun to protect their house. You really need to go, and if you do have a shotgun or a gun in the house, you need to go and take some classes so you'll know what you're doing there, so you'll end up shooting yourself, since the majority of people who have guns end up shooting themselves. Okay. But the other 3% of the people in this country own 175 million guns collectively. According to this threat analysis, for the last 10 years, the far-right extremists have been stockpiling weapons and ammunition. And if, this is what Johnson said, if you go and you start passing some very strict gun laws, you're feeding right into their narrative, you're drawing in more recruits, and you're radicalizing people who already have 350 million guns between 20% of the population. David's on the phone from Baltimore. David, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
No problem. Now, you're talking about connecting the dots. One of the things that kind of disappointed me is that they banned Trump from Twitter and all social media. And the reason I say that is because, to me, we missed an opportunity to really see what he's saying, who are the people who are, parroting him. And, spreading his message. And so, like, we now can only rely on other sources to find out exactly what this guy is saying directly to people, as opposed to, you know, us being able to see it firsthand. And I really enjoy white supremacist honesty, because historically, their strategies have always failed. And that's because their ego is so big, they can't accept the fact that they can make a mistake. The fantasy and the absolute cartoon parody of white supremacy is that it's not real. It doesn't exist. But that does not change the fact that these people believe it. And the belief system is incredibly strong. And you can't pull these people away from their belief. In fact, when you counter their belief system or when you try to attack their belief system, it makes them dig in even deeper. So white supremacy is here to stay. It's just a matter of how we deal with it and how we understand what they're talking about.
Thank you so much.
And I agree with you with the firearms issue.
Oh, yeah.
I believe in having firearms, especially with all the firearms that these lunatics have. So any gun legislation, you know, I'm not looking forward to anything that's going to restrict my access to guns.
No, I'm actually, thank you so much. Folks, here's something I want to throw out in a little bit of time I have left. Four former Homeland Security secretaries have now written a note saying, a public letter saying, we can't afford one more day without a confirmed Department of Homeland Security leader. They are urging the Senate, urging them to quickly pass Joe Biden's nominee, which is Alejandro Mayorkas, to quickly get him installed, because the whole purpose of Department of Homeland Security, listen to me, that's the only agency that's charged with protecting you and me and our homeland. So before we start talking about the next Supreme Court justice and who's going to order the burgers for dinner and you know, who's going to get the fries we need, no, we need to get this person installed, because their job is to protect us and our homeland. Folks, we're going to talk more tomorrow at 3 p.m. Make an appointment. Meet me here. Let's have another conversation that matters. Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve you in this way.